702 ABC Sydney, 666 ABC Canberra, ABC Local Radio New South Wales. Good morning, it's 5 past 5. It's The Big Fish with Scott Levi. And where have all the rainbows gone?
Over the rainbow, way up high, there's a land that I heard of once in a lullaby.
Are they with the leprechauns, Steve Samuels? Good morning.
Yes, good morning, Scott. How are you?
I'm very well. Last week, a big convention of concerned fishos up in the snowy mountains to nut out the problem of the disappearing rainbows. Maybe Judy Garland has them. What have we worked out?
Well, we've worked out they're all at the end of the Yellow Brick Road. But, I don't know that we've worked out anything, but for your listeners, I guess it's probably nice to just, you know, go back a little bit so they get this within the context. And we've had some very good fishing up there, particularly at Lake Eucanbine and Lake Jindabyne, for about 6 or 7 years. And in the last 2 years, the rainbow trout have just failed the show. But they failed the show in two aspects. One, they're not as common in anglers' catch data over the last 2 years, and they haven't contributed much to a spawning run. So the numbers haven't been up the river to spawn and anglers haven't been catching them. Now, that's not to say you can't. There are some people, particularly in Jindabyne, that have still been able to catch rainbow trout. Those are the deep trolling out in the middle of the lakes in deeper water have been doing all right. But certainly people who fish the margins, people who like to fly fish, drown the bait from the shore, spin from the shore, our rainbows have certainly gone missing. So we held a series of meetings on the 28th and 29th of May with New South Wales Fisheries and Dr. Michelle Dedal from New Zealand to come over and see if we just can't formulate a plan to begin a bit of research to determine what might be happening to the rainbows. Do we have a problem or don't we have a problem? Is it a food thing? Is it a fish thing? We just need to try and find out, because trout fishing down this way is very, very important to the local economy in the region.
Are they just hiding down deep?
Well, we don't really know, Scott. I mean, this is half our problem, that when fisheries presented to us, you know, the data that they had concerning the trout fishery, it came to our realisation that basically all we had was some hit-and-miss data over the spawning runs, which really doesn't give you the complete picture of what the fish are doing all year. When Dr. Michelle Dedal presented from New Zealand, he presented data which went back over 100 years. They had 100 years of data relating to fish trapping, spawning run, migration, a thing called limnology, which is the food productivity of Lake Taupo. So we came to the conclusion that the New Zealanders had a lot more information than we did. And that placed them in a better position, not to actually fix a similar sort of problem they have on Taupo, but they were better able to communicate to anglers and local business people as to what was going on and what they could reasonably expect from the fishery. And I think that's where we need to get to in New South Wales. We need to get back to collecting data on our fisheries so we can sort of explain to people what's actually going on.
Many theories flying around, some saying they dropped the guts out of it when all the juvenile rainbows are milling around in the weed beds along the shoreline and they don't have anything to eat.
Yeah, well, you know, there's lots of theories, but, you know, I must say Snowy Hydro, to a degree, have copped a bit of a hiding that they don't need over this. I mean, all these lakes are hydro lakes, and since their inception, and we're going back 40-odd years now, the lakes have risen and the lakes have dropped. And we've sort of not seen this. We've seen this sort of similarly before, but not in this way. So I don't really think it's a dropping of the water issue. It might very well be linked to the food. You know, the food might have changed. But see, that's the problem, Scott. We've got lots of theories. We've got people were complaining that the lakes hadn't been stocked. Well, that's patently not true. We've stocked the lakes every year since the year 2000, and we continue that. People were worried about cloud seeding for snow, and, you know, that's a bit of a furphy as well. There are lots of theories, but where we're at the moment is we go back to our scientists and say, well, what's the actual truth? And they really can't deliver much to us. So we need to get to a situation where our scientists can say, no, look, the food level's all right in the lake, the fish numbers are all right in the lake. Our monitoring indicates that they're likely to be deep, they're likely to be in the shallows, they're likely to be somewhere else, you know.
But how good had the fishing been before this last couple of years of drought?
Oh, look, it had been fantastic. And I mean, I think that's what's exacerbated this problem of the last 2 years of not actually having the fish around.
I mean, as in a fish drought rather than a trout drought.
Well, that's true, but there are some changes, and some changes have taken place, and we need to take those into account as well. I mean, probably from the years about 2005 through till about the 2011 season, we had just the best midge hatches on the lake that we'd ever seen, certainly over a consistently long period. The rainbows were in close, lots of rainbows. People were having just phenomenal fishing, and a lot of people were saying it's the best fishing they've ever had.
Well, Bushy, who's fished all over the world, said it was the best fly fishing. And he said, look, you won't believe this, but it's the best fly fishing I've ever had anywhere in the world.
Absolutely.
I was getting tons of beautiful, big, hard-fighting rainbows close into shore, rising freely to Griffith gnats and midge pupas and anything you want to throw at them. You know, it's a bit of a tough riddle to crack sometimes, but once you worked out how to catch those midging rainbows, the sport was phenomenal, and the size was very, very good too.
Oh, yeah. Well, people like myself, we were becoming instant gurus. I mean, we were taking people up there that had never caught a trout on fly before, and within 15 minutes it was all done, you know. They were sort of certainly catching the fish once they understood it.
But not so now.
And the last 2 years, though, it's also interesting to note that those good years followed the drought year where the lake dropped down to 9%. And then every year that lake came back up over grass to land. The last 2 years it hasn't done that.
Replicating the initial flooding, which was the bumper time as well, wasn't it?
That's probably
what the situation is. It may have just gone back to how it had been for many, many years. But the brown spawn run this year, Josh Hutchins, who I fished with on the weekend, 50 fish a day, up to 100 in a weekend, up to 8 pounds. On the nymphs and the glow bugs, one after the other, shoulder to shoulder with other fishers, all catching fish. It's been a phenomenal run.
But that's the paradox of it all, Scott. In those really good years when we had lots and lots of rainbows, the brown runs up the river were quite small and nobody had that fishing. They were fishing in the opening weekend in October, November for rivers full of rainbows. And over the last 2 years, that rainbow run up the rivers hasn't occurred, which is more concerning. If the rainbows don't run up the river, they don't spawn. So that's more the concern, because that's how we populate the lake. But the 2 years the rainbows haven't run up the lake to spawn, we've had these two massive brown trout runs that's producing great fishing. So it seems to be browns up, rainbows down, rainbows up, browns down. Now, we don't really know, but we sort of have to come to grips with it. So we can sort of advise anglers, or just let anglers know that, you know, the world's not going to fall apart. There will be fish there, but the fishing may just change season to season, and we have to let them know.
Well, hopefully it's not disease or pollution, because they're harder problems to fix. So we'll find out, hopefully, that the science will be done, and we'll find out where all the rainbows have gone.
Well, certainly. We're hoping so. We've got a bit of a research plan being put together by Fisheries at the moment, which is going to talk about, you know, improving the spawning run monitoring, which looking at the productivity of the lake, the food sources and all those sorts of things, and to do some creel surveys. So anglers shouldn't be surprised if over the next year or 2 years they suddenly start seeing fisheries people come up and sort of saying, look, can you tell us what you've caught? I'd urge anglers to, you know, get rid of the secrecy mentality. Really work with fisheries, be dead honest about what you're catching, where, when and why.
Anglers and honesty. Gee, they're words that aren't often used together.
Hey, you played somewhere over the rainbow, mate.
Look, it's a great job you're doing, very proactive. Thanks so much for joining us, and it must have been very heartening to see hundreds turn up at these meetings last week, so people genuinely care about the fishery there and the economic benefit it brings to all in the Snow Mountains. So thanks for joining us, Steve.
Well, that's what my organisation, the Monero Acclimatisation Society, works for, and we're there to sort of work for just the good old average angler that wants to go and have a fish. So we wish them all the best, and we hope to have more news in the not-too-distant future.
All right, keep us in the loop. Thanks, Steve Samuels.
Will do, Scott.
Ain't no fish, ain't no flounder, ain't no tuna, ain't no fish.
Holy mackerel, some days there just ain't no fish.
Ain't no perch,
ain't no flounder, you flounder for fish.
Ain't no fish.
And although at times you get a mess full, other days are less successful. Some days there just ain't no fish.
Ain't no fish. ain't no fish.
Some days we'll start mighty fine
with a splash,
with a nibble that tugs at your line.
Mighty fine.
But you reel it in to find you caught a beat-up shoe that's leaking water. Some days there just ain't no fish.
If there ain't no fish, we can always go to Mussels. They're very cheap at the moment at the markets. It's 5:15. It's Julie Ray.
Now, if you ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday night fish fry.
Hey, Julie Ray, good morning.
Good morning. Hola, I should say.
Hola. Welcome back to the Big Fish. We're talking about bodybuilders in Barcelona, aren't we?
Muscle. Espanol, that's the one. Spanish muscles, but not the bodybuilders, ones that you love to eat. And with Aussies, Australia's got some fantastic fresh muscles that we can use. And I'm a bit of an underutilized seafood, and it's a bargain. They're not expensive. But something to warm your toes during winter. It's a really quick and easy one bowl to get you nice and warm through winter.
Right to your cockles.
That's it. Warm your two cockles.
Which they're sometimes called.
That's exactly right. So, you're very clever, Scott. Very clever. Mm. Now, let's go. Of course, you've got to have some chorizo in there. We're going to Spain. So, go and get some lovely chorizo, which is Spanish sausage. I got two of those. I slice those up and I cook those off in the pan that I'm going to do everything in. So, a nice big pot. And I put them into a cold pan. And I don't put any oil because the lovely fats that come out of that sausage. So, put in the cold pan, turn the heat on. And then it'll start heating up and you'll see the lovely fats come out of it.
It's orange.
Chorizo. Yeah, they've got some paprika in there and the spices that go into that Spanish sausage. So there's a bit of fat in there as well, which gives it some flavour. And get that. And then just once they be golden on one side, turn them over and get golden on the other. Don't walk away. We don't want black chorizos. Then when your chorizos are cooked, take them up, put them onto a paper towel to take any excess oil off. And then splash a little bit of olive oil into that pan. Keep the pan in the medium to high heat, and then add a large brown onion that I've halved and sliced, thinly sliced, some garlic. Of course, you've got to have garlic when you're going to eat Spanish food. About three cloves of that, finely chopped. Saute that. Once they're softening, add a nice teaspoon of smoked paprika. And smoked paprika is different from your standard paprika because it has got that lovely smokiness. And have a look for it because it really does give it a depth of flavour and really feel like you're in Spain there. So a teaspoon of that and just saute it going. I'm going to add half a teaspoon of chilli flakes, a bit of heat. You don't have to add the chilli, but I love the chilli with this.
You don't. There's a bit in the chorizo that if you don't want
it. A little bit. Depends on your chorizo. I got a mild chorizo. Mm. If you had a hot chorizo, you wouldn't even add chilli. Yeah.
The beautiful oil that comes out of them, it's like gold.
Fantastic.
It's just lovely.
Yeah, beautiful. So you put that aside. Once that your onion softened, then I add a cup of dry white wine, and wine that you'd love to drink, so if you're having a sip at the same time, splash in a cup of that and add a pinch of saffron, a lovely saffron, to give it some lovely colour. Then when that's brought to the boil, add a canned tomatoes. You can add fresh tomatoes, but this time of the year tomatoes aren't the best, your fresh tomatoes, so canned tomatoes, good quality canned tomatoes. Put that in and smash them down get into nice little pieces, or you can add the diced tomatoes. Bring that to the boil, and once that's come to boil, add your mussels. Now, your mussels, give them a clean beforehand. Take some beard off if you can. Check that if you buy them in the bags, they're okay. If they're cracked, it's okay to use. But if you buy them individually and your mussels have got a crack on them, I would discard them because you don't know what that meat's been exposed to. But just put them in there. Put the lid on, give them a bit of a shake, and after a few minutes, start taking them out, the mussels out, once they start opening. But you've got to make sure that meat has shrunk, a bit of shrinkage in your meat before you take them out. Not too much, because they look a bit gelatinous, they're not cooked yet, and nothing worse than eating a raw mussel or partly cooked mussel. Take those out, put them into a bowl, and then put the heat back up and reduce that sauce to about half, so do another 10 minutes. And then I add, put in, before I actually reduce that sauce, I put in some quinoa. So you can cook some quinoa into that sauce and cook it down, or you can pre-cook your quinoa. You know that lovely little quinoa? It almost looks like couscous.
Little grain.
Little grain. So that really plumps it up. But I actually have cooked, I could, while that sauce is, your mussels are cooking and while your sauce is done, if you want to use another pot, I actually just cook up one cup of water and one cup of quinoa in together and bring that to the boil.
Could you use some rice if you didn't have quinoa?
You could use rice, you could use couscous. Just so that, that'll actually plump it up and make it really heartier and fill you up. You don't even, you could even use pasta, cook pasta separately if you want
to. Yeah, I like the sound
of that. Like that. So I've used quinoa. Make sure you get some nice crusty bread as well. Once that's in, put the mussels back into that sauce that's reduced, toss it round, pour it onto a nice big large bowl or put it into separate bowls, give it that crusty bread, and there is your quick and easy Spanish mussels that will just, as you said, warm you to your cockles.
Hola, Julie Ray. Thank
Hola.
You so thank you so much for that one.
On delay, Scott.
Catch you next time on The Big Fish.
See ya.
Now, if you've ever been down to New Orleans, then you can understand just what I mean. Now, all through the week, it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night, they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday night fish fry. It was right.
Julie Ray, our Big Fish chef. 22 past 5, 702 ABC Sydney, 666 ABC Canberra, ABC Local Radio, New South Wales. And we've had a lot of fun with our master caster, Nathan Walker, who's been filling in with Dr. Brian Snapper Pratt. There's a nice photo of Nathan with his master casting certificate there on the Big Fish blog sites around New South Wales this morning as well. He's a handsome devil. No wonder Al McGlashan's been using him on his TV show up on the Yucumbean River, chasing the mighty spawn runners.
There's a singing single, a selling celebrity. There's a rage in marriage. There's a grave in gravy. There's a dump in dumpling, a liver in delivery. There's a pay in every patriot. And a spit in hospitality. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk white or Abercorn, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity.
All right.
If you take the two A's out of aardvark, if you take the two L's out of llama, if you take the two O's out of ooze, put them all together, they spell hello. But there's a tuna, there's a tuna, there's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore, guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. There's a dye in every diet. There's a gas in gastrointestinal tract. There's a man in mental illness. And ovary and overreact. Yes, there's a tuna. There's a tuna. There's a tuna in every opportunity. Chunk light or Abacore. Guess who's knocking at your door? It's the tuna of opportunity. Oh, water, oil, or ahi. You should give it a try. The tuna of opportunity.
702 ABC Sydney, ABC Local Radio, New South Wales, and 666 ABC Canberra, where our next guest is. Another short story from Nathan Walker, the master caster, who's filling in for Dr. Brian Snapper Pratt, who's chasing the giant kingfish of New Zealand. Oh, that was a tuna song, by the way. You can tune a guitar, you can't tune a fish. And every time we play that, we get so many requests that they love the tuna song. Good morning, Nathan.
Good morning, Scott.
Yes, I put your photo up this week. Gosh, I can see why Al McGlashan's the TV fishing journalist has chosen you as his pin-up boy.
Yeah, thanks very much.
My goodness, you're handsome. although Al, who's well known for his underwater footage of giant mako sharks and marlin off Sydney, he had a bit of a disaster, I believe. He shot a bit of unintentional underwater footage. Is that right?
He did, unfortunately, yeah. Crossing the Yucumbean River, he had a bit of a slip and happened to drop his very expensive little helicopter that carries a little camera. it's not waterproof, unfortunately, so he dropped that in the Yukonbeen River and wasn't too happy.
So that's the end of it?
Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, he actually didn't start it up, so he thought he might dry it out first and hopefully he might be able to save it, but it doesn't look good.
So we heard from Josh Hutchins. I went fishing with Josh last weekend, and he just got back from the spawn run. He said they got 50 fish in a day, biggest 8 pound. They got 50 fish the day before. Everyone was catching fish. It's one of the hottest spawn runs on record, I believe.
Oh, it is, yeah. There's just that many fish up there at the moment. It's unbelievable. It just seems to be getting better every year, the spawning run. So a lot of catch and release helps, definitely. So most anglers are pretty good. They let the fish go. So it's a great year this year. A lot of fish up there.
And, of course, it's fly and lure only, isn't it? What
exactly.
What sorts of flies and lures work?
Look, mostly glow bugs and nymphs, very small nymphs, so around size 12, size 14 flies. They're not too fussy, though. Just getting the flies down to the zone where the fish are was the most important thing. Once the flies were there, it was no problem hooking up. It's quite easy, in fact.
Well, they're using the old spotted dogs, are they, the lure brigade?
Oh, they are, yeah, spotted dogs. Some quite big lures, actually. Some guys are using some barramundi lures up there, but the Browns were right into them, yeah.
I hope they're catching them in the mouth. I hope they're not doing the old suicide hole technique.
Yeah, look, there's a few of those around, but look, most of the guys are getting them in the mouth, yeah.
Yeah, good. We don't want the jaggers and snaggers.
No.
For sure. What else is biting?
Oh, look, there's been some good runs of brim and flathead around the St. George's Basin area. Some quite big flathead, in fact, around the 80 to 90 centimetres. A lot of squid as well around the Jarvis Bay area. So it's good squid around. There's also been a big tailor, been doing the rounds on Facebook there, around about 8 kilo tailor, some reported around the basin there somewhere, but we haven't got any confirmation on that yet. But one of the biggest tailor I've seen on the south coast in quite some years. So 8 kilos, it's almost a kingfish.
That's a monster, isn't it? But they do get that big. There are plenty of them.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, it's fantastic.
There's a great fishery, that St. George's Basin, isn't it? Recreational fishing haven. The nets are out, the fish are back, and the lion fishermen really don't make a dent in the numbers. It's the nets that seem to take the fish out of the estuaries.
That's right, and they've got the artificial reefs in there, which just has been helping big time since they put them in. It's fantastic, really great fishery.
Anything offshore?
Look, the snapper is still biting pretty heavily at the moment, mostly on the reefs there, anywhere from 30 to 40 metre sort of range in depth. A lot of snapper. I haven't heard of too many kingfish. There's the odd sort of one poking around, but yeah, a lot of snapper right up and down the coast from almost Wollongong down to Eden, so they're pretty thick at the moment, the snapper.
Sounds great.
Yeah.
What's your tip as the master caster at 28 past 5, what's your tip for the average fly casting mug like yours truly? What's the thing that everyone does wrong that you see?
Look, the biggest mistake I find with beginners is using the wrist too much in the cast. It really opens the loop up, so really learn to firm the wrist up and use more of your elbow and your shoulder. The other thing as well is learning to stop the rod efficiently. So a really pronounced stop of the rod helps form that tight loop. So I'd say they're the main two things, less wrist, and a much more positive stop on the forward and back cast.
So is it the stop that puts the bend into the rod that transfers the energy into
the line? That's right, yeah. So just a good way to release the energy, to transfer the energy, is having that positive stop.
Mm-hmm.
So Mel Krieger says it pretty good. He says, stop the rod. That's it.
good stuff. It's great fun fly fishing, and there are so many people now doing it for the saltwater species. It's a really brilliant way to fish.
That's right, yeah. Saltwater's becoming really popular with the fly these days. So a lot of offshore stuff as well, tuna and kingfish on the fly, which is pretty unconventional. But, yeah, all sorts of species get taken on fly now, which is good to see.
Great way to fish. Nathan Walker, the Master Caster, thanks for joining us on The Big Fish.
No problem. Thanks, Scott.
Don't forget, too, if you've caught a big kingy or something on fly, or any way at all, really, as long as it's legal, send the photo to us. Our fishy photos website is always calling out for something to put on the wall. Send the emails to thebigfish@your.abc.net.au, thebigfish@your.abc.net.au, and you can see those fishy photos on the blog site. And this week on the blog site, you can see a photo of that fella, Nathan Walker, holding his Master Caster certificate. Very proud he is too.
Here comes Tinker with his fishing tips, some hot advice for your fishing trip.
Where to find them? What's the bait?
Are you catching any, mate?
Good morning, Stinker.
Hey, guys, Scott.
On the mobile this morning on the Tweed, just about to head out and catch a feed on the Tweed, but the change of season, Stinker, what do you notice in your patch?
Well, in Tweed, there's really seems to be a line between what you catch in winter and what you catch in summer. At my stomping ground, Port Stephens, it's quite a fascinating place, you know, when there's that transition period between summer and winter, and that is that there's very little change. Now, I don't know quite why. Maybe it's got to do with water temperature, which is currently around 21 degrees, which is beautiful, and I'm sure the fish appreciate it as well. But what we catch in winter or summer, it pretty much goes, there's not much change at all, really, which is good stuff. I mean, listen, we catch drummer all year round. As long as you've got that white water and a bit of surge and a bit of swell, you can guarantee you're going to catch a drummer any month of the year. And the same applies for flathead. The flathead can be caught inside Port Stephens any time. I mean, at times there are better, like the summer months are probably the better months for dusky flathead I'm talking about here. The trumpet of whiting, little fellas with spots on them, little guys, beautiful fish to eat, but pretty small, but great fun for the kids. They're there all year round. And so your bream are there all year round, snapper all year round, paler more so these months, the current months other than summer, and whiting more so summer than winter. But you can still catch them now in these winter months. There's still some beautiful whiting to be caught. So I don't know. It's quite a fascinating place in that respect. As long as the water stays reasonably warm, that's what we're talking between, maybe 18 degrees and 21 degrees. But as long as you can get pretty close to that, well, there's very little movement of fish.
Well, we've got that.
Hang around.
We've got that at the moment, haven't we? But the tailor are really on at the moment too. They're a good fish. They're a fun fish to catch, aren't they?
Oh, tailor. Tailor are awesome. Tailor are great fun. And interestingly enough, there's more tailor fishermen up on the Tweed and on the beaches up in the far north coast and even in the southeast Queensland and up as far as Fraser Island. They love fishing for tailor. They just love it. And you can see them shoulder to shoulder, and there's some magnificent old photographs of old fishing photos of fishermen shoulder to shoulder with the old centre pin reel fishing for tailor off the beach. And I did it myself. Oh, gee, it was exciting to go with your father and have a some seagar or later some pilchards, some West Australian pilchards, or even before that were big blue pilchards, which you get on the East Coast, and you'd hoik them out on any of the beaches along the coastline in what they call the gutters, the deeper water, and hang on. And the tailor would come in droves. And you never, ever count how many you caught. You kept fishing till your bait run out. And when your bait run out and you can still carry them, that's when you went home.
It's interesting you mentioned the centre pin reels. We can't mention brands on the big fish, but we should celebrate the fact that we do make good stuff in Australia. And those centre pin side cast reels that are still the go for you and me and so many beach and rock and even you use them outside, of course, fisher folk. They're a great product, aren't they? Just solid as rock. Those ones that you had back in the 1920s or whenever you were fishing, they're still as good as they were then today.
Well, yeah, well, see, for the person like me, they're perfect because maintenance isn't my go. And the more parts seem to, you know, the more parts are real, but the more things that can go wrong. But one thing good about summer, I don't know whether you've ever noticed, but what you can do is go rock fishing in winter for bream. You can kick your toe and not even know it because your feet are numb.
That's right, yeah. There's something about the sun coming up if you're on a rock ledge waiting for the tailor to bite, you know, rising out of the water on a crisp, clear winter's morning. The sun really looks like this beautiful big orangey golden orb, doesn't it? It's so clear, the air at this time of year.
Oh, well, I love it. I used to be a real morning person, but as I get older, I've become sort of more of an evening person. But there's a couple of places that really go crackers in winter in Port Stephens, and one of them is the Torpedo Tube, which I have mentioned before, which is under the shadows of South Head Tomaree on the southern side of Port Stephens, and it's an old torpedo launching site that was used during the Second World War. And it's become a focus. Well, this is the greatest Grimm spot of all time. And so Grimm on that torpedo tube is just sensational. There's actually another place into the break wall in Nelson Bay. The Grimm are all moving in there along with the Ludwig and between now and when it starts to warm up again, that's the place to go. Right in the middle of Nelson Bay, that's the place to go. But there's another place, and I've mentioned it too, but it's really worth it, and that's the Grit Hole on the Fingal Outer Lighthouse Island. It's the most sensational brim spot that I've ever been to, and it starts to fire up right now on the top of the tide in a howling, cold, miserable, southerly wind. You can get in out of the wind, and the water's reasonably calm, and, some thumpers in there.
It's a good time of year, isn't it? Stink of the change of season. Got to love
it. Yes. And then, of course, you can go way up in the back blocks of Port Stephens and drift around up there when the steam's coming up off the water early in the morning. Yeah, it is a very exciting time.
Well, tight lines, have a lovely time in your old stomping ground, the Tweed. We'll catch you next week on The Big Fish.
Hello, Scott.
Get line, I get pull, honey. You get a line and I get a pull today. You get a line and I get a pull. Meet you down at that crawdad hole, honey. You know I mean right. Whoa, honey. You know I mean right.
And I'll catch you on the Big Fish.
We're at 17 to 6. Good morning, Scott Levi with you. 702 ABC Sydney, ABC local radio across New South Wales. And that's just a wonderful part of fishing off the rocks for Taylor. You get down on the rocks before the sunrise and that giant golden orb rise up out of the sea on a crisp, clear winter's morning. Sunrise on the way, 6:54 this morning if you're heading down for a spot of rock fishing, and sunset 4:53 this afternoon. And for our Sydney fishers, low tide at 9:13 this morning, 0.6 of a metre at Fort Denison. Coming up, the Waymaster with the Scales of Justice. He's always got a story or two to tell. Speaking of good stories too, very keen fishers chasing the spawn runners at Jindabyne on the Threadbow and on the Eucombine River, where it's very cold, many of them sleeping out in the swags, ice in their hair. Up at the crack of dawn to chase those big brown trout as they do what fish do at this time of year. And Blue the Shearer has his thoughts about people who chase trout.
Tonight I'd like to talk about those anglers who fish for trout. These men with habits quite perverse, they lie of course, but even worse, they leave their homes, their kids, their spouses, don a silly pair of trousers, known as waders, funny vests with 50 pockets round their chests. On their heads they put a hat, if a man could call it that. No thought at all of how it looks, old and dirty, filled with hooks. They take a pair of dirty socks, a basket, little plastic box, in the early hours of morn, pack the car, and then they're gone. They drive to some deserted river, cold enough to make them shiver, and in that stream they stand about hoping to secure a trout. At warmth and comfort they will scoff, unless their bits are freezing off. Unless they suffer quite a bit, they say, they're not enjoying it. And then they start to act quite odd, concentrating on their rod and always playing with their fly, whether it be wet or dry. It's part of some strange ritual with customs quite habitual. They chant the angler's catechism, wholly into masochism, Hare's Ear, Nymph and Greenwell's Glory, Red Take, Tups, and some too gory to ever mention right out loud, unless you're with an angling crowd. Trout fishing does have bad effects on the angler's view of sex. That may be why he seeks to tie something called a Spanish fly. Now, I recall some indication of a different connotation that I heard a long way back as an aphrodisiac. An angler's wife, says one with force, cannot expect much intercourse. With women, anglers aren't at ease. They show a deal more expertise at playing with their rod and fly. It doesn't do much good to sigh when your husband's only wish is to stuff and mount a fish. Now, this technique may be of use. If you're wanting to seduce an angling husband who's obsessed with flies and rods and hook, line, vest, stick a fish hook in your lip. He'll take one look at you and flip and give a little extra wiggle. Remember that you mustn't giggle. What seems to me to make no sense is men with some intelligence subject themselves to such abuse. Do they do it to amuse? No, I do not believe they do. On trying to think this subject through, I have come to realise they just like playing with their flies.
It's 13 to 6, says Blue the Shearer with his thoughts on fly fishing. Here's a song about a fly fisherman who falls in love with a beautiful cutthroat trout.
It was late last summer. I was floating the river down through town, feeling like my luck would never change. For I'd been so lonely, watching all of those other happy guys hooking up while I felt only pain. When out of nowhere came the prettiest flash of red and gold, a finer set of spots has never swum. And when she swallowed my line, I knew she wasn't just another fish in the sea. Oh, finally I had found my only one. Little Miss Cutthroat, you're the queen of my drift boat. You swam into my life today, straight out of the blue. Little Miss Cutthroat, my Yellowstone dreamboat. More than just my fly is hooked on you. I had visions of love and a gazing into each other's eyes, walking in the rain, hand in fin. She was pulling my heartstrings, I figured she was just playing hard to get, and soon enough we'd both be falling in. Ah, Little Miss Cutthroat, you're the queen of my drift boat. You swam into my life today, straight out of the blue. Little Miss Cutthroat, my Yellowstone dream boat. More than just my fly is hooked on you. She was gone. I saw her purposely spit my hook right out, and I knew then that she'd planned this from the start. She flipped me off with her tail, and I cried in my lucky fishing hat, 'cause she caught and never did release my heart. Little Miss Cutthroat, you're the queen of my drift boat. You swam into my life today, straight out of the blue. Little Miss Cutthroat, my Yellowstone dream boat. Don't you know I'm hooked on Little Miss Cutthroat, the queen of my drift boat. You swam into my life today, straight out of the blue. Little Miss Cutthroat, my Yellowstone dream boat. More than just my fly is hooked on you. Thank you.
702 ABC Sydney, 666 ABC Canberra 10 to 6. Scott Levi with you, the song about a fellow who falls in love with a Yellowstone cutthroat trout. They are very beautiful fish. And then he's gutted when she leaves him. You'd never hear songs like that on any other program. Waymaster, good morning.
That's terrible.
I had a clutch of beautiful fingerlings. What's happening on the mighty mid-north coast?
Oh, mate, lots are happening up here, mate. Water's starting to cool down a little bit. There's a couple of piggies starting to move around. Some nice brim. I tell you what, the jewies are going a bit quiet though, brother.
Yeah, they tend to bite through wintertime, don't they?
Well, they do, but now, you're just hearing the odd one. It's not like it was a little while ago, a couple of months ago. But they have their little phases up and down. But mind you, there's a lot of fish moving too, like with the big southerlies. We're getting got another big southerly now happening. All that lovely rainy sort of stuff and wind and that. Supposed to get a little bit cranky by the end of the weekend, but all those fish will be moving with that, especially with the southwesters.
Yeah. What about the Luderick? Are they up in the rivers?
Oh, mate, they're going off like a frog in a sock. They are, mate. Sorry. That's as good as your gutter joke, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, really. But you've been catching a few on live nippers, haven't you? But are they on the weed yet?
Yeah, mate, yeah, they're getting them on the weed and the cabbage. Also, I go back there. Boys go, oh, geez, a bit quiet today, Cole. I sneak back down there of a night with nippers, and I usually leave the heads there, just the gut and gill them, knock the head off, and just leave them there on the rock where I was, and the boys count them in the next morning when they come down.
You're cruel, man.
I'm a cruel man. Well, I usually end up on somebody's aerial that I know.
Oh, okay.
Just tell them how many you got there.
That's not very nice.
Oh, you get
aren't they a lovely fish to eat, though? I must say, I've really turned into a bit of a blackfish lover as far as their eating qualities. Keep them alive or put them into a cold ice slurry and then skin them. Got to skin them.
That's right.
So important. If people eat them with the skin on, they'll taste terrible.
The funny thing about it is, like you said, I know a lot of blokes have put them in a keeper net or something like that. I tend to dispatch them straight up. I find that it's less stressful for the fish. If you dispatch them straight away, cut their throat and lead them out straight away, and then you put them in ice, and then when you get back, I just sort of take the side off them, and I leave the gut cavity all whole. And I just go through the pin bone and just run up over that and just leave the whole all the ribs and that in place on the fish with the bit of flesh that's sitting on it, because it's not worth taking the bone out. And then I skin it and bone it, and absolutely gorgeous.
Absolutely. One of the best eating fish you'll ever get. And funnily enough, when they net them and sell them in the markets, they're one of the cheapest fish you'll ever buy, but they don't taste as good. I don't know if they look after them properly.
Well, it's the fact is, Scott, and I don't mean any disrespect to anyone, mate, they sit there for 4 or 5 days with their gut in them. Even though they're on ice, they're not gutted. They've still got their gut in them when they go to market. And that's the thing that's wrong. They're a herbivore, aren't they?
Yeah, a bit of everything, really. Omnivore,
that's it. Yeah, but it's mainly
all the vegetable matter
that breaks down and causes that. It's like an iodine-y smell. It goes right through them, and it actually spoils a really nice fish.
Yeah, it's a shame, because get them fresh, look after them, treat them with respect and clean them properly, and you won't eat a better fish. But anyway, that's a lesson to be learned. But it's funny, they're enigmatic fish too, because at my little wharf just down the road, there's an old digger there on Monday. He got 8, and they were beautiful, big blackfish. And then he went down on Thursday morning, and I walked up. How are you going? You only got 1. They move around in schools, don't they?
What do you call them? Enigmatic, do you?
Enigmatic.
Enigmatic. I call them frustrating.
Yeah, same thing.
No, that's a layman's term. Yeah. No, I find them, you think you got them worked out, and they're one of those fish, you think you got them worked out, and I'll tell you what, they change the rules.
I used to have an enigmatic car, one you didn't have a clutch in.
Yeah, I did. I sold it to a bloke for $500. It's his problem now.
Anyway, what are your tips for blackfish fishing?
Mate, persistence. Go down and knock. Go down. Here's a big one. Don't steal the old fella's rocks. Don't stand on their spot they've fished for the last 20 years, because you'll never hear the end of it. That's one big tip.
Yes,
don't take their spot. Good fresh cabbage or weed's the best one. Look after your bait. Fish as light as you can to the conditions. Bleed them. If you're going to keep them, bleed them. If not, let them go. Don't keep them in a bag and then let them go at the end of your session. mate, you won't spook them. Everybody goes, oh, you're going to spook them, but that's not right, mate. You might put them down for 5 minutes, 10 minutes. It's worse if you've got a fish on and you've lost him during the fight. That's when they go off the bite for a little while longer. But if you get one in and you let him go, mate, he'll just go on hide and he won't worry the rest of them.
So you don't need to keep them in the keeper bag if you're not going to keep them for a fee.
No, well, that's correct, mate. I've seen a lot of blokes that do. No, they put the smaller ones in there. They dispatch the ones that they want to keep, and they put the smaller ones
in the bag.
Because
they think the smaller ones, when they let them go, will spook the school.
Yeah, that's right.
But that you don't agree with that?
No, I don't agree with that, mate. If you get them, just let them go. Well, I've proved it before. You let them go, don't you still catch them.
Good tip. Yeah. Catch you next time, Waymaster.
There you, mate.
There he is, the Ludric Guru. 702 ABC, Sydney ABC Local Radio, New South Wales. It's The Big Fish. Checking out the Sydney scene, Peter LeBlanc. G'day, Pete.
Good morning, mate. How are you?
The Scotland Island pirate you are. Are you going out this morning?
Yes, mate. Yeah, we're going to go out and see if we can't get some fish about the place.
That's the way. So you'll be throwing off the bow line any minute?
Yeah, I've got to pick up in about 20 minutes' time. So.
What are you chasing?
Mate, we're going to go out today and do a little bit of a bash along the coast, I think. It's been a little bit sporadic, the fishing, so we're going to go and do a little bit of lots of things, I think.
All right, you've got plenty of options there. What about the snapper? Are they on?
Mate, they're not on, but there's some big ones still getting about in close in around the 30 metres of water. They seem to be south of Long Reef at the moment, down towards Manly and out in front of Queenscliff there. So they're all out about 20 to 30 metres of water off those kind of areas all the way down to Sydney Heads. And there's been some stocking fish getting caught when you get onto a good school.
What about the kingfish? Are they still playing the game?
Mate, the kingfish have gone really hard to tempt, but I tell you, there's some big fellas about the place. Once again, it's a bit of a sporadic fish, but as I say, if you spread your efforts, you might run into them. What we're going to try and do this morning, we're going to hit the headlands basically all the way down to Long Reef, and then if that's no good, we're going to head up along the Central Coast Way, up as far as King Yumba. So we've got a big day ahead of us today, and hopefully we can pull some fish together.
A lot of your kingfish fishing relies on collecting live bait. Is there a bit about?
Mate, there's been a lot of big squid about the place. It's been really good. If you get around the edges of the weed on the drop-offs, there's some really big fellas waiting to be caught at the moment, that time of the year. And using the heads is actually getting some bites as well, so you don't have to sacrifice a whole squid to try and tangle with one of those metre-plus kings.
Probably rather have a feed of squid than a feed of kingfish, actually, to tell you the truth.
It tends to be like that, doesn't it? The tummy overrules overrules the fight sometimes.
It's good because it's sometimes hard to find the squid, isn't it?
It does have its moments. There are certain times when they're hard, and this time of the year they're not so much hard. There's just fewer about of them, and the areas to try and target is the edge of the weed when you've just got a drop-off. So if you've got around Barrenjoey Head, it's a great area at the moment. Just drifting around the front of the Barrenjoey Headland there, there's some very large squid that's been caught. Also the other headland just down south of that being the Avalon Whale Beach Headland. That one down there, exactly the same out the front and the rough ground out there. As soon as you get that drop off, there's some big squid about the bait schools.
Any schooling yakkers or slimies?
Yeah, the yakkers have been schooling around in Broken Bay. There's been some tailor and the odd day that have been on them and some salmon. But once again, the water's so... it's a funny colour that's coming out of Broken Bay at the moment. So they seem to be on the edge of that line of the funny water. And then when the tide's starting to push back in, they're starting to push back into the bay again. So it's a matter of doing a little bit of a travel and scouting and just finding those working birds. But there's some working fish around the bait fish at the moment.
I was telling a yachty mate of mine that there are lots of good tailor in Broken Bay, and he threw out a lure on Wednesday, I think it was, and went out for a sail, and it was just a light breeze, it was just the right trolling speed, and they got two beautiful big greenbacks, so they were very happy with that.
Yeah, that's right, and that's one of the things, isn't it? You've got to be there and doing it. You're never going to catch them when we're sitting on the lounge room, so it's a matter of getting out there and just trying, like you said. And there's lots of schools of them, and, you know, it's a lovely way to go if you've just got a slow troll and pulling in fish, and it's generally the washes and the headland, but at the moment, like you said, with the big greenbacks, you're actually after the schools of fish that are going around in Broken Bay, and once they bust up in front of you, it's always a lot of fun, especially on the lighter tackle.
It's great fun. Tight lines, Peter. Sounds like you've got plenty of options on the northern beaches this morning. Get out and get into them.
Exactly right, mate. I'll just get the last couple of rods set up, and I'll be going over and picking them up.
Out you go. Peter LeBlanc there.